New Conley notes prove him guilty, says Burns. The Atlanta Georgian, Sunday, 26th of April, 1914, 4th edition, page 1, column 1. Detective asserts writing shows Negro in habit of using did as well as done, which state called white man's work. Letters sent by sweeper to Negress declared to be proof he is degenerate, much of contents reported unprintable. A sensation more impressive than that created by the affidavits of the Reverend C. B. Ragsdale and the Negro woman, Annie Maud Carter, in which they asserted they had heard from Jim Conley's lips a confession of the Fagan murder, was announced by Detective W. J. Burns Saturday night in making public a series of letters written by Conley to the Carter woman. The detective, in an interview, declared that a careful study of the letters more firmly than ever established him in the conviction that Conley was the murderer of the Fagan girl, as the Carter woman swore Conley confessed to her. He said it also made plain that Conley was lying in his statement Friday when he said he didn't know the Carter woman except as he had seen her pass his cell, spells Negro correctly. That Conley is a degenerate of the foulest type. That Conley, contrary to the argument of the solicitor, was accustomed to spell the word Negro correctly. That Conley was in the habit of using did interchangeably with done, and did not confine himself to the ungrammatical use of done, as the solicitor contended. Frank, from his cell in the tower, gave out a statement appealing to the sense of justice and fair play of the people of Atlanta, soon after Burns made public the Conley letters. Reporters were allowed to see the letters in the offices of the Burns Agency. Detective Burns said that the same privilege would be accorded to anyone who cared to inspect them. Conley is said by Detective Burns to have written more than 100 letters to the Carter woman since he has been in jail. He had a mass of them in his office. One was brought in by an operative while the reporters were there. They indicated that Jim was a dusky Don Juan. Many of them were unprintable. They revealed the author as unspeakably vile and degenerate. Solicitor's argument hit. Solicitor Dorsey, arguing that the murder notes found near the body of Mary Fagan palpably were dictated by a white man, said that a Negro never would have spelled the word Negro correctly as it appeared in one of the notes. Yet several of the notes accredited to Conley and addressed to the Carter woman have this word and have it spelled as it was in the death note at Mary Fagan's side. Solicitor Dorsey also said that Conley would have said done instead of did in the murder note had it not been dictated to him. His notes to the Carter woman have the word repeatedly. Here is the comment of Detective Burns in making public the letters. I have just come into possession of evidence of the most startling and convincing nature against the Negro Jim Conley, an examination of which proves conclusively that the murder notes found by the body of Mary Fagan emanated exclusively from his perverted brain. More powerful than confession. It is evidence of a nature more continued on page 4, column 2. Fourth edition, page 4, column 2, New Conley Notes, revealed by Burns, continued from first page. Powerful and convincing than an actual confession from the Negro himself, this evidence consists of a large number of letters written by the Negro, Jim Conley, while in jail, addressed to the Negro woman, Annie Maud Carter, who recently made an affidavit charging that Conley had confessed to committing the murder. These letters are some of the letters referred to by the Carter woman in her affidavit as having been written to her. These letters show beyond the peradventure of a doubt that Conley is an abnormal man, just the vile degenerate that I have heretofore depicted him. The letters are full of the vilest, most abominable language, dealing with Conley's lust for this woman. It fills one with a loathing and disgust merely to read them. They are the most nauseating things imaginable. Most of the letters are addressed to Annie Maud Carter, but Conley, apparently having possessed her already in his mind, addresses some of them to Annie Maud Conley. Conley asserted today in his statement to the newspapers that he barely knows her. But these letters utterly refute this and show that he has simply entangled himself in another lie. The letters contain so much vile, unprintable stuff that it would be difficult to print hardly any one of the letters in full, but I hope that you newspaper men will be able to reprint some portions of the letters, as there could be no more convincing proof of Conley's guilt. Conley, prolific writer. They show beyond question what a vile, loathsome brute he is. It was maintained at the trial of Leo M. Frank by the state that Conley could only write with the greatest difficulty, yet I have in my hands a mass of these letters. They also substantiate my previous declaration that Conley was a prolific note writer. It is also interesting to note that these letters contain the words did and negro. These words are most significant in view of the fact that at the trial it was maintained by the state that Leo Frank must have conceived and dictated the death notes because they contain the words did and negro, and that if Conley had conceived these notes, he would have written them done and nigger. These letters completely explode the argument of the state because they contain, as before stated, the words did and negro in the plainest writing. It has always been admitted, both by the state and the defense, that the author and writer of the death notes was the murderer of the little girl. Now that these letters have established beyond a peradventure that Conley is the author of the notes, there should be no longer any question of Conley's absolute guilt. The authenticity of these letters is beyond question. They are identical with the death notes. The H, SS, O, and W are typical, in fact, every letter is a typical Conley letter. These letters are open for the inspection of anyone who wishes to see them. In this respect, the defense differs somewhat from Chief Lanford, who trumpets forth the charge of perversion, and when his bluff is called, backs down and says he has nothing to show, in fact, that he had never made the charge. Fourth edition, page 1, column 2. Mary Fagan slain, in pencil factory 1 year ago, today, 1 year ago today, Mary Fagan was killed in the National Pencil Factory. It is something of a coincidence that a revelation that Detective Burns regards as possibly of even more importance than the confession affidavit submitted to Judge Hill Friday is given to the public on the first anniversary of the tragedy. The girl was slain on April 26th, which last year fell on Saturday. Her body was found Sunday morning. Fourth edition, page 4, column 2, new Frank case evidence. Above the dash, a facsimile of a brief, disconnected part of a letter written by Jim Conley to Maud Carter, showing he uses the words did and negro in spite of Solicitor Dorsey's argument that a white man must have dictated those words in the original death note. Below, a part of the death note. The word self, spelled slef, also appears in both the original and the Carter notes. Fourth edition, page 4, column 4. Frank writes new message to public. Here is a message to the people of Atlanta given out by Leo M. Frank soon after the Conley letters were made public Saturday night. To the people of Atlanta, I make this appeal to your fairness. It was the horrible charge that I was a pervert that poisoned your minds, infuriated you against me, and put me beyond the pale of human sympathy, where nothing that I said would be believed, where the word of a vile Negro and self-confessed perjurer was eagerly accepted in preference to mine, and where I could not obtain even the common privilege to which every man is entitled, a fair and impartial trial. It was this charge that so enraged the crowds around the courthouse that the judge upon the bench, fearing that I and my lawyers might be killed if the verdict was one of acquittal, advised them to remain away and keep me out of the courthouse. It is this charge that has poisoned and still poisons the minds of the public against me and denies me the commonest rights of a human being. About 2 weeks ago, Mr. Burns made, through the newspapers, the request that if anyone had information as to any acts of immorality on my part, that they would communicate with him. He received not a single response, and on the next day, through the same newspapers, he made an offer of $1,000 for such information. Cites Lanford's actions. Again, there was no response, except from Newport A. Lanford, the chief of detectives of the Police Department of Atlanta, who stated that he had in his possession the information that Burns was seeking, and added sneeringly, "Probably more than he wants." Mr. Burns being then out of the city, Mr. Lehan, his assistant, called and the chief of detectives told him that while he had the information that he could not show it to him, but would show it to Mr. Burns when he returned. When Mr. Burns returned to Atlanta, he immediately called on Mr. Lanford and was told then by him that while he had the affidavits, he would not show them to him because the motion for the new trial was then pending. How could there be any reason for him to conceal this information if he had it? I do not understand. But this is what he is quoted as saying in the press, that he refused on the ground that he did not believe it would be doing justice to himself, to the state, or even to Frank for any publicity to be given as to the perversion affidavits until after the hearing, and then added, "At the trial of Frank, we did not bring up the subject of perversion. It was brought out by Frank's lawyers." On last Friday, again, after my side had closed its evidence, Mr. Lanford was approached for these affidavits, and he repeated the statement that neither the state nor the Police Department of Atlanta had ever claimed, and did not now claim, that I was a pervert, and that that charge had been put into the case by my own lawyers. Scores, Detective Chief, to this silly drivel, this pitiful failure of the man to realize his duties as an officer of the public, it is difficult for me to make reply. I can only say that his idiotic statement that the charge of perversion was brought into the case by my own lawyers is known to be a silly, impudent falsehood by thousands, if not millions, of people who know perfectly well that it was brought into the case by the testimony of Conley when he was first put upon the stand and examined by the Solicitor General representing the state of Georgia. I submit to the people of Atlanta that Mr. Lanford has only taken this position because his bluff has been called. He knows perfectly well now, and he has always known, that the charge of perversion against me was a miserable, cowardly lie, and I further charge that if Mr. Burns had not demanded his proof, he never would have opened his mouth, but would have allowed the public and the courts to remain under the impression that he and the police still believed and charged me with being a pervert. I now make this solemn declaration that I am not a pervert, nor an immoral man in any sense of the word, and that these charges against me are a mass of horrible, atrocious lies. I further state, and send my message straight to the heart and conscience of every man and woman in Georgia, that I did not kill Mary Fagan, that I am absolutely innocent, and that my execution would not avenge her death, asks now for fair trial. The charge of perversion having been withdrawn against me, I do not see how any man with a love of justice and fair play in his heart could deny me the privilege of a new trial, a fair trial, which I have never had. I am seeking for that which the people of Atlanta would not refuse to a dirty mongrel cur slinking through its streets, the right to a fair showing before its life is taken. The charge of perversion that is now withdrawn made it impossible for me to get a fair trial. I have had none. I simply ask that I be given a fair show for my life, that I be allowed to make my defense before a jury that knows the truth, that I am not a pervert. A jury that will not be intimidated by fear of being shot down and killed should it acquit me. A jury whose minds will be calm to weigh my testimony against that of a self-confessed Negro perjurer and pervert. A fair trial is what I want, is what I am entitled to, and what no fair-minded man should deny me, and I appeal to the fair-minded people whose silent influence stands back of the courts, and whose servants the courts are, to see that I am given a fair trial. To the people of Atlanta, I make this appeal to your fairness. It was the horrible charge that I was a pervert that poisoned your minds, infuriated you against me, and put me beyond the pale of human sympathy, where nothing that I said would be believed, where the word of a vile Negro and self-confessed perjurer was eagerly accepted in preference to mine, and where I could not obtain even the common privilege to which every man is entitled, a fair and impartial trial. It was this charge that so enraged the crowds around the courthouse that the judge upon the bench, fearing that I and my lawyers might be killed if the verdict was one of acquittal, advised them to remain away and keep me out of the courthouse. It is this charge that has poisoned and still poisons the minds of the public against me and denies me the commonest rights of a human being. About 2 weeks ago, Mr. Burns made, through the newspapers, the request that if anyone had information as to any acts of immorality on my part, they would communicate with him. He received not a single response, and on the next day, through the same newspapers, he made an offer of $1,000 for such information. Cites Lanford's actions. Again, there was no response, except from Newport A. Lanford, the chief of detectives of the Police Department of Atlanta, who stated that he had in his possession the information that Burns was seeking, and added, sneeringly, "Probably more than he wants." Mr. Burns being then out of the city, Mr. Lehan, his assistant, called, and the chief of detectives told him that while he had the information that he could not show it to him, but would show it to Mr. Burns when he returned. When Mr. Burns returned to Atlanta, he immediately called on Mr. Lanford and was told then by him that while he had the affidavits, he would not show them to him because the motion for the new trial was then pending. How that could be any reason for him to conceal this information, if he had it, I do not understand, but this is what he is quoted as saying in the press, that he refused on the ground that he did not believe it would be doing justice to himself, to the state, or even to Frank for any publicity to be given as to the perversion affidavits until after the hearing, and then added, "At the trial of Frank, we did not bring up the subject of perversion. It was brought out by Frank's lawyers." On last Friday, again, after my side had closed its evidence, Mr. Lanford was approached for these affidavits, and he repeated the statement that neither the state nor the Police Department of Atlanta had ever claimed and did not now claim that I was a pervert, and that that charge had been put into the case by my own lawyers, Scores, Detective Chief. To this silly drivel, this pitiful failure of the man to realize his duties as an officer of the public, it is difficult for me to make reply. I can only say that his idiotic statement that the charge of perversion was brought into the case by my own lawyers is known to be a silly, impudent falsehood by thousands, if not millions, of people who know perfectly well that it was brought into the case by the testimony of Conley when he was first put upon the stand and examined by the Solicitor General representing the state of Georgia. I submit to the people of Atlanta that Mr. Lanford has only taken this position because his bluff has been called. He knows perfectly well now, and he has always known, that the charge of perversion against me was a miserable, cowardly lie, and I further charge that if Mr. Burns had not demanded his proof, he never would have opened his mouth, but would have allowed the public and the courts to remain under the impression that he and the police still believed and charged me with being a pervert. I now make this solemn declaration that I am not a pervert, nor an immoral man in any sense of the word, and that these charges against me are a mass of horrible, atrocious lies. I further state and send my message straight to the heart and conscience of every man and woman in Georgia, that I did not kill Mary Fagan, that I am absolutely innocent, and that my execution would not avenge her death, asks now for fair trial. The charge of perversion having been withdrawn against me, I do not see how any man with a love of justice and fair play in his heart could deny me the privilege of a new trial, a fair trial, which I have never had. I am seeking for that which the people of Atlanta would not refuse to a dirty mongrel cur slinking through its streets, the right to a fair showing before its life is taken. The charge of perversion that is now withdrawn made it impossible for me to get a fair trial. I have had none. I simply ask that I be given a fair show for my life, that I be allowed to make my defense before a jury that knows the truth, that I am not a pervert, a jury that will not be intimidated by fear of being shot down and killed should it acquit me, a jury whose minds will be calm to weigh my testimony against that of a self-confessed Negro perjurer and pervert. A fair trial is what I want, is what I am entitled to, and what no fair-minded man should deny me, and I appeal to the fair-minded people whose silent influence stands back of the courts, and whose servants the courts are, to see that I am given a fair trial.